affluent aren't going to immediately turn over, you know, their wealth to an advisor just on interacting with them on a personal introduction. It takes time.
You want to get to engage and you want to sit down and have a conversation with them.
Hi, this is the Insights Panel podcast from Brighthouse Financial, a podcast for financial professionals about retirement planning. We bring you insights from leading experts to help you stay ahead of the curve and have more productive conversations with your clients. My name is Amy He, and after our previous discussions on why advisors find prospecting difficult, we're rounding out the theme with some practical suggestions on how advisors can create effective prospecting strategies. Our experts will walk us through how advisors can set growth goals and execute a successful prospecting strategy if they've fallen out of the habit. Joining me were Jeb Blunt, prospecting expert and author of Fanatical Prospecting, and Matt Oxley, advisor champion and CEO of the Oxley Institute. I first spoke to Matt and I asked him, why does an advisor need a prospecting strategy?
In any type of business, if you're not growing, you're dying a little bit every day. And we see so many advisors who are really dying a little bit every day for the simple reason they're not focused on prospecting. To establish a growth mechanism is really new clients in. So if they're bringing in, you know, 5 to 10 new affluent clients a year, they're in a good growth mode. If they're bringing in more than 10 affluent clients a year, they're rainmaker status. They're in the top 5% of acquirers in the industry today.
And how does an advisor set goals for growth?
So for instance, you know, if I was coaching an advisor, the first thing, we're going to identify how many new affluent clients and what level of new assets they're looking to acquire over the next 12 months. And that's going to be linked to a longer range goal, sort of, it might be Project 100 Million, which is the longer range, you know, 3 to 4 year goal. But this year, we're looking to bring in 25 million and we're looking to bring in 15 new relationships.
And once an advisor's goal is set, what should they do then?
Once that goal is set, then they have to come up with their ideal client profile, which is take that good hard look at your top 25 clients and start putting together your dream list. So they got to start sourcing names, they have to identify people they want to interact with, and then they have to get active. They have to get those personal introductions. They need to get out there and start socializing. They need to proactively start meeting with the professionals who work with their affluent clients. That means the CPAs and the attorneys. And all of this pulled together, not one thing is what's going to change, you know, their growth or their prospecting. It's really a convergence of all these factors done consistently over time.
What kind of effect can an advisor expect from putting a strategy in place?
An effective prospecting strategy can transform an advisor's business. You know, we look at it within 18 months. If you follow executing the right activity, sourcing names, getting personally introduced, getting out there in the social world of your affluent clients. In 18 months, it can transform an advisor's business entirely. Within 3 years, we've seen advisors triple the size of their asset base. But it's a longer-term play. It's not immediate. You know, the affluent aren't going to immediately turn over, you know, their wealth to an advisor just on interacting with them on a personal introduction. It takes time.
From your experience, how much time does that take?
What we have found is that, you know, the timeline, when you get personally introduced and word-of-mouth influence is flowing in your direction, you know, it's sort of the winds at your back, 60% become a client within a month. The timeline is a lot shorter. Now, granted, there's 40% might take a year or more, but 60% within a month. It really is impactful, you know, for the advisors to have, you know, very, very good, subtle, seamless sales skills.
That was Matt on how the right approach to prospecting can transform your business. Next, I asked Jeb Blunt how he would begin putting together an effective prospecting strategy.
The key is understanding your target market. So who am I going after? Now, that target market can be your existing client base, for example. If I'm going after them, my strategy might be to take my client base apart, understand where there may be gaps in their portfolio that I have products that I can fill in, and then focus my time and attention on calling the prospects or reaching out and touching the prospects that are in that particular target market. The next thing that you want to focus on with strategy is cadence. So let's just say that we'll take a group of small business owners, and it's an easy target to focus on. So you live in a community, say you live in a town of, 50,000 people, and you've identified, 40 small business owners in your community that have businesses that are big enough that you understand these folks are creating enough wealth that they should be investing it properly.
So how would you reach out after you've identified those people and businesses?
So you have a number of channels that are at your disposal. You have social media, you have the telephone, you have in person, and that can include walking into their business, having a conversation with them just cold, or it could be meeting them at a networking event. You also have email at your disposal, so you can send emails. Then I'm going to arrange to be at the local chamber after hours meeting or the Rotary Club, and I'm going to meet them in person. And then I may repeat that over time, and I may have several voicemail messages that allow me to for example, teach them something over maybe 4 or 5 30-second commercials on voicemail. And then I'm going to repeat that cadence over time.
You mentioned identifying your target market. Can you speak more about how an advisor chooses where to focus?
Well, I always begin with, who do I like to work with? I have certain businesses and certain companies and certain groups of people that I really enjoy working with. I'm very careful that we work with businesses that fit our set of values and are the type of businesses that we can really make an impact with. So if I'm an advisor, I always begin there. I want to spend my time and my effort with groups of people, no matter where they fit, that fit me and my values and my practice, my firm. So in my particular world, I like to work with people between $1 million and $5 million in net worth. Or I like to work in a marketplace that not a lot of people are going after, which may be the people between, say, $250,000 and $1 million in net worth who need a financial advisor, but they don't always think that they qualify for one, and not a lot of people are chasing that particular market. So maybe I focus my attention there.
So are there different types of clients to look out for, and why is it important to understand these different personalities?
When we talk about four types of clients, really we're talking about four types of communication styles. And the four types of styles are directors, socializers, analyzers, and consensus builders. Now, just for clarity, there are lots of different ways to describe these personality types. And the directors tend to be people who are used to leading. They communicate in bullet points. They want to get stuff done. They're going to focus on business first, social later. And they value people who save them time. And they value people that say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, and they get stuff done. Socializers, they're energetic. They love to talk about themselves. They're expressive, and they want to tell their story. And the best way to deal with socializers is to shut up, get out of the way, and let them talk. They will essentially pay you to listen to them. Analyzers, these are folks that show little emotion. They like to make sure that every I is dotted and T is crossed. They work off spreadsheets, and they can be a little bit difficult because they don't show a lot of emotion. So, if you're a socializer, if you're a person that really is expressive and you like hanging out with people, you have to show a lot of patience to work with these folks. The key thing with analyzers is stay away from personal things, focus on values. And finally, there's the consensus builder. Consensus builders are folks who like to have all their ducks in a row. They make decisions very, very slowly. They want to make sure that everything is safe. But the consensus builder, we also call them interrogators. They tend to ask a lot of questions. So they'll draw you in by asking you a question about everything. So when you're dealing with a consensus builder and they start asking you questions, what's the most important is to slow down, keep control of your emotions, and then turn it around, start asking them questions to get them talking.
And what about trying to decide on whether to be a generalist or a specialist? What would you suggest?
It's a great question, and there's no real answer to whether you should be a generalist or a specialist. And it's a question we get asked all the time. I think it's a matter of where you fit and what you want for your business. My company, Sales Gravy, we are generalist. We are industry agnostic. Now, that offer some challenges for us, because sometimes we're working with an industry and they say, well, tell us about all the, you know, all the experience you have in this particular industry, say maybe software or financial advisors or automotive or transportation or you name it, whatever it is. And we say, well, we may not have a ton of experience in your particular industry. What we have is we have experience across so many different industries that we're able to bring these insights that you may not get from someone who is a specialist in your particular vertical. And what we say is true. Being a generalist allows us to do those things. On the flip side of that, if you're a specialist, you're an expert. And when you're an expert in a particular area or a particular type of, you know, financial instrument or a particular group of people, say let's say you're a specialist and you work only with attorneys, high net worth attorneys, you become an expert that people listen to. And the authority principle says that when an expert gives a recommendation, people are likely to comply with that recommendation because you are an expert in your field. It also is great for referrals because people in that same field see you as someone that they should be dealing with. So in both cases, whether you're a generalist or a specialist, there are benefits. You just have to make a decision in your particular practice or firm, what makes the most sense for you. You may love being a specialist, and it may mean a lot to you that you're an expert in a particular area, and you may find it really easy if you focus on a certain group of people or a certain group of financial instruments that because you're a specialist that it's much easier for you to manage and focus your time and attention on a high probability market where you have the best opportunity to win. If you're a generalist like me, you may find that, you know, it's more exciting for you, that you have a broader market that you go after. But I think that for financial advisors, in my opinion, it's all about you have to decide what's best for you and your practice, where your passion lies, and then focus on that.
That was Jeb on identifying your target market and figuring out whether you should specialize. Thanks to Jeb and Matt for their great insights, and don't forget to join us for the next episode of the Insights Panel podcast when we tackle a new subject, how improving your client's financial knowledge is good for your business. You can find more episodes of the Insights Panel podcast on brighthousefinancialpro.com/insightspanel or subscribe for free through any podcast app to receive new episodes direct to your mobile device. Stay ahead of the curve with the Insights Panel from Bright House Financial. This information is brought to you courtesy of Bright House Financial, Inc., that provides, through its affiliates, annuities and life insurance products issued by Bright House Life Insurance Company, Charlotte, North Carolina 28277, and in New York only by Bright House Life Insurance Company of New York, New York, New York 10017. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers, and the information presented is for educational purposes only. Speakers were compensated for their participation.